Why did Robert Kennedy want to be president when his uncle, President John F. Kennedy, was assassinated?
And Robert Kennedy's dad was Bobby Kennedy, who was also assassinated when he was running for president.
This is Bob Boyd.
And Jerry Boyd.
This is Issues in Education. Why did Robert Kennedy suspend his campaign for president and endorse President Trump when the Kennedys have been Democrats for generations? What's RFK's real reason for joining with President Trump, and what does he hope to accomplish?
RFK is chairman and founder of Children's Health Defense and has a real plan and passion to help America's children.
RFK's voice is spasmodic. That's the result of a neurological disorder resulting in spasms in his vocal cords. So that's why his voice sounds like it does.
It's a tremendous sacrifice for RFK to suspend his run for president that comes at a high cost to him, to his family and friends who are longtime Democrats. Did you pray about your decision to suspend your campaign and endorse Trump?
This is a spiritual journey for me. I reached my decision through deep prayer, through hard-nosed logic, and I asked myself, what choices must I make to maximize my chances to save America's children and restore national health? 16 months ago, in April of 2023, I launched my campaign for President of the United States. I began this journey as a Democrat, the party of my father, my uncle, and back then the Democrats were the champions of the Constitution. As you know, I left that party in October because it had departed so dramatically from the core values that I grew up with. It had become the party of war, censorship, corruption, and big money. I left the party to run as an independent. Conventional wisdom said that it would be impossible even to get on the ballot. And then I'd need a team of attorneys and millions of dollars to handle all the legal challenges from the DNC. The naysayers told us that we were climbing a glass version of Mount Impossible, but we proved them wrong. We inspired a massive independent political movement. More than 100,000 volunteers sprang into action, hopeful that they could reverse our nation's decline. They set up tables at churches and farmers' markets. During a heat wave in Nevada, I met a tall, athletic volunteer who cheerfully told me that he had lost 25 pounds collecting signatures in 117-degree heat. Young Americans donated their lunch money, and senior citizens gave up part of their Social Security checks. Our 50-state organization collected those millions of signatures and more. No presidential campaign in American political history has ever done that.
That's very impressive. But do you really believe in an honest system with a fair primary and independent media that you could have actually won the election for president?
In an honest system, I believe that I would have won the election. Primaries with regularly scheduled debates, with fair primaries, and with a truly independent media untainted by government propaganda and censorship. After all, the polls consistently showed me beating each of the other candidates. But I'm sorry to say that while democracy may still be alive at the grassroots, it has become little more than a slogan for the Democratic Party. In the name of saving democracy, the Democratic Party set itself to dismantling it. The DNC waged continual legal warfare against both President Trump and myself. Each time that our volunteers turned in those towering boxes of signatures needed to get on the ballot, the DNC dragged us into court, state after state, attempting to erase their work and to subvert the will of the voters who had signed those petitions. It deployed DNC-aligned judges to throw me and other candidates off the ballot and to throw President Trump in jail. It ran a sham primary to prevent any serious challenge to President Biden. Then, when a predictably bungled debate performance precipitated the coup against President Biden, the same shadowy DNC operatives appointed his successor without an election. They installed a candidate who was so unpopular with voters that she dropped out in 2020 without winning a single delegate.
This is fascinating to think about how the Democrat Party operatives replaced President Biden with Kamala Harris, with no votes, only their choice, with a small elite group who decided for everyone else that she should be their candidate.
It's amazing and sad how the American people let one party eliminate the other using lawfare, dragging you and Trump into court to eliminate any challenge to their selected, not elected, candidate. Then they complain how the Republicans want to end democracy. What hypocrisy.
My uncle and my father both relish debate and the battle over ideas. The DNC and its media organs engineered a surge of popularity for Vice President Harris based upon nothing, no policies, only smoke and mirrors. In Chicago, a string of Democratic speakers mentioned Donald Trump 147 times just on the first day. Oh, who needs a policy when you have Trump to hate? In contrast, at the RNC convention, President Biden was mentioned only twice in 4 days. How did the Democratic Party choose a candidate that has never done an interview or debate? We know the answers. They did it by weaponizing the government agencies, by abandoning democracy. They did it by suing the opposition and by disenfranchising American voters.
That's excellent. Let me repeat what you just said, because this is the essence of tyranny. They chose a candidate who did nothing, stood for nothing, but who was selected, not elected, by weaponizing the government agencies, the Department of Justice, FBI, the federal courts, and by abandoning the democratic process, and three, suing the opposition and disenfranchising American voters. You could also mention how the Democrats control the media.
What alarms me is the resort to censorship and media control and the weaponization of the federal agencies. When a U.S. president colludes with or outright coerces media companies to censor political speech, it's an attack on our most sacred right of free expression, and that's the very right upon which all of our other constitutional rights rest. President Biden mocked Vladimir Putin's 88% landslide in the Russian elections, observing that Putin and his party controlled the Russian press, and that Putin prevented serious opponents from appearing on the ballot. But here in America, the DNC also prevented opponents from appearing on the ballot. And our television networks exposed themselves as Democratic Party organs over the course of more than a year in a campaign where my poll numbers reached at times in the high 20s. The DNC-aligned mainstream media networks maintain a near-perfect embargo on interviews with me. During the 16 months since I declared, ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, and CNN combined gave only 2 live interviews with me. Those networks instead ran a continuous deluge of hit pieces with inaccurate, often vile, defamatory smears. Some of those same networks colluded with the DNC to keep me off the debate stage. Just 37 hours after he took the oath of office, President Biden and his White House invited the CIA, the FBI, DHS, the IRS, and other agencies to censor me on social media.
It's so ironic that the media in this country looks like the Russian media to protect Russian President Putin, to keep him in power.
So also, the media here is doing the very same thing by preventing serious opposition to their selected candidate.
Yeah, selected, not elected. How could anyone who watches the news not see the collusion and coercion that the Democrat Party has done with all the federal agencies and the mainstream media and social media?
Even Facebook's founder, Mark Zuckerberg, says he was pressured and coerced to caving into White House demands for censorship during the 2020 election. And now he says he's sorry before the U.S. House committee that he did it.
The mainstream media was once the guardian of the First Amendment and democratic principles, but has joined this systemic attack on democracy. But governments don't censor lies. They don't fear lies. They fear the truth. And that's what they censor. Are we really still a role model for democracy in this country? Or have we made it a joke?
It's really beginning to look a lot like a joke when we're ruled by a few elites in one party, the Democrat Party, who control the media, the government, the judiciary, and the American people who are naive.
So why did you run for president in the first place?
Three causes drove me to enter this race in the first place. And these are the principal causes that persuaded me to leave the Democratic Party and now to throw my support to President Trump. The causes were free speech, a war in Ukraine, and the war on our children. In April of 2022, President Biden sent Boris Johnson to Ukraine to force President Zelensky to tear up a peace agreement that he and the Russians had already signed, and the Russians were withdrawing troops from Kiev and Donbass and Luhansk. That peace agreement would have brought peace to the region and would have allowed Donbass and Luhansk to remain part of Ukraine. But President Biden stated that his objective in the war was regime change in Russia. His Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin simultaneously explained that America's purpose in the war was to exhaust the Russian army, to degrade its capacity to fight anywhere else in the world. These objectives, of course, have nothing to do with what they were telling Americans about protecting Ukraine's sovereignty. Since tearing up that agreement, forcing Zelensky to tear up the agreement, we've squandered the flower of Ukrainian youth, as many as 600,000 Ukrainian kids and over 100,000 Russian kids have died, and the Ukraine's infrastructure is destroyed. We squandered nearly $200 billion already. We've pushed Russia into a disastrous alliance with China and Iran. We're closer to the brink of nuclear exchange than at any time since 1962. Judging by her bellicose, belligerent speech in Chicago, we can assume that President Harris will be an enthusiastic advocate for this and other neocon military adventures. President Trump says that he will reopen negotiations with President Putin and end the war overnight as soon as he becomes president. This alone would justify my support for his campaign.
Just think what a mess the Biden administration has made. So if Kamala Harris is elected, what a terrible catastrophe it will be.
Just think of the gargantuan tragedy they're making as they push Russia into an alliance with China and Iran when it all could have been avoided.
That's right. When President Trump was in office, his foreign affair policy kept us out of war, and he would have kept us out of Ukraine. He kept our prosperity and economy in much better shape, and he kept the border closed to millions of illegals and gave American leadership a model for this world.
You mentioned your concern over the poor health of American children. You mentioned Dr. Casey Means and Callie Means in the importance of diet and exercise.
Callie is arguably the leading advocate for ending the chronic disease epidemic that is destroying America's health and ruining our economy. Callie has exposed the insidious corruption at the FDA, the NIH, the HHS. I was delighted when Callie told me that President Trump was anxious to talk to me about chronic disease and other subjects. President Trump suggested that we join forces working together on the existential issues like ending the forever wars, ending the childhood disease epidemic, securing the border, protecting freedom of speech, unraveling the corporate capture of our regulatory agencies, getting the U.S. intelligence agencies out of the business of propagandizing and censoring and surveilling Americans and interfering with our elections. I tried unsuccessfully to open similar discussions with Vice President Harris. Vice President Harris declined to meet or even to speak with me.
It's no surprise the DNC candidate Kamala Harris would not help solve the problems that her party has caused.
Most people are unaware of the chronic diseases young people have.
In case some of you don't realize how dire the condition is of our children's health and chronic disease in general, this is an issue that affects all of us far more directly and urgently than any culture war issue. We spend more on healthcare than any country on earth, twice what they pay in Europe. And yet, we have the worst health outcomes of any nation in the world. We're about 79th in health outcomes behind Costa Rica and Nicaragua and Mongolia and other countries. Nobody has a chronic disease burden like we have. And during the COVID epidemic, we had the highest body count of any country in the world. We had 16% of the COVID deaths, and we only have 4.2% of the world's population. And CDC says that's because we are the sickest people on Earth. We have the highest chronic disease rate on Earth. And the average American who died from COVID had 3.8 chronic diseases. So these were people who had immune system collapse, and no other country has anything like this. Two-thirds of American adults and children suffer from chronic health issues. 50 years ago, that number was less than 1%. Oh, we've gone from 1% to 66%. In America, 74% of Americans are now overweight or obese, and 50% of our children. 120 years ago, obesity was almost unknown. In Japan, the childhood obesity rate is 3% compared to 50% here. When my uncle was president, I was a boy. Juvenile diabetes was effectively non-existent. A typical pediatrician would see one case of diabetes during his entire career, a 40 or 50-year career. Today, one out of every three kids who walks through his office door is diabetic or pre-diabetic. There's been an explosion of neurological illnesses that I never saw as a kid. ADD, ADHD, speech delay, language delay, Tourette syndrome, narcolepsy, ASD, Asperger's, autism. In the year 2000, the autism rate was 1 in 1,500. Now autism rates in kids are 1 in 36, according to CDC nationally. 1 in every 22 kids in California has autism. 77% of our kids are too disabled to serve in the United States military. What is happening to our country? And why isn't this in the headlines every single day?
You said that 77% of our kids are too disabled to serve in our military. 77%? And that childhood pre-diabetes and diabetes was once rare, but now it's common. Yet these childhood illnesses are not even in other countries.
There's nobody else in the world that is experiencing this. This is only happening in America. In my generation, the autism rates are about 1 in 10,000. In my kids' generation, 1 in 34. I'll repeat, in California, 1 in 22. Why are we allowing this to happen to our children? These are the most precious assets that we have in this country. How can we let this happen to them? Cancer rates are skyrocketing in the young and the old. 40% of teens have a mental health diagnosis, and 15% of high schoolers are on Adderall, and 500,000 children on SSRIs. So what's causing this suffering? First and the worst is ultra-processed food. About 70% of American children's diet is ultra-processed. That means industrial manufacturing in a factory. These foods consist primarily of processed sugar, ultra-processed grains, and seed oils. Laboratory scientists, who many of whom formerly worked for the cigarette industry, which purchased all the big food companies in the 1970s and 80s, deployed thousands of scientists to figure out chemicals, new chemicals, to make the food more addictive. And these ingredients didn't exist 100 years ago. Humans aren't biologically adapted to eat them. Hundreds of these chemicals are now banned in Europe, but ubiquitous in American processed foods. The second culprit is toxic chemicals in our food, our medicine, and our environment. Pesticides, food additives, drugs, and toxic waste permeate every cell of our bodies. The assault on our children's cells and hormones is unrelenting. And name just one problem. Many of these chemicals increase estrogen. Because young children are ingesting so many of these hormone disruptors, America's puberty rate is now occurring at age 10 to 13, which is 6 years earlier than girls were reaching puberty in 1900. Our country has the earliest puberty rates of any continent on the earth. Breast cancer is also estrogen-driven and now strikes 1 in 8 women. We are mass poisoning all of our children and our adults. Considering the grievous human cost of this tragic epidemic of chronic disease, it seems almost crass to mention the damage it does to our economy. Chronic disease costs more to the economy as a whole, costs at least $4 trillion, 5 times our military budget. 77% of school lunches are processed foods. There's no vegetables. There's nothing that you would want to eat. The good news is that we can change all this. America can get healthy again. First, we need to root out the corruption in our health agencies. Joe Biden just appointed a new panel to NIH to decide the food recommendations. And they're all people who are from the processed food companies. They're deciding what is healthy, what goes to our school lunch programs. They're all corrupted and conflicted individuals. These agencies, the FDA, USDA, and CDC, all of them are controlled by giant for-profit corporations. With President Trump's backing, I'm going to change that. We're going to staff these agencies with honest scientists and doctors who are free from industry funding. We're going to make sure the decisions of consumers, doctors, and patients are informed by unbiased science. The food lobbyists have a bill in front of Congress today that is backed by the White House, backed by Vice President Harris and President Biden to allow this to happen. This is $3 trillion cost that is going to bankrupt our country. For a fraction of that amount, we could buy organic food for every American family, 3 meals a day, and eliminate diabetes altogether.
That's right. Food production using chemicals, pesticides, and food additives is contributing to chronic diseases like diabetes and cancer. As people consume food, the human body wasn't ever designed to eat. It's obvious with healthier foods, people become healthier. Corporate profits, not health, have led to this crisis. But what will you do if President Trump is elected president?
We're going to bring healthy food back to school lunches. We're going to stop subsidizing the worst foods with our agricultural subsidies. And for that, we need new leadership in Washington. Vice President Harris has expressed no interest in addressing this issue. 4 more years of Democratic rule will complete the consolidation of corporate and neocon power, and our children will be the ones who suffer most. I watched generations of children get sicker and sicker. I had 11 siblings, and I had 7 kids myself. Almost all of them are damaged, and nobody in power seemed to care or to even notice. For 19 years, I prayed every morning that God would put me in a position to end this calamity. The chronic disease crisis was one of the primary reasons for my running for president, along with ending censorship and this Ukraine war. It's the reason I've made the heart-wrenching decision to suspend my campaign and to support President Trump. This decision is agonizing for me because of the difficulties it causes my wife and my children and my friends. But I have the certainty that this is what I've meant to do. And that certainty gives me internal peace. If I'm given the chance to fix the chronic disease crisis and reform our food production, I promise that within 2 years, we will watch chronic disease burden lift dramatically. We will make Americans healthy again. Within 4 years, America will be a healthy country. Ultimately, the future, however it happens, is in God's hands, in the hands of the American voters and those of President Trump. If President Trump is elected and honors his word, the vast burden of chronic disease that now demoralizes and bankrupts the country will disappear. This is a spiritual journey for me. I reached my decision through deep prayer, through hard-nosed logic, and I asked myself, what choices must I make to maximize my chances to save America's children and restore national health? I felt that if I refused this opportunity, I would not be able to look myself in the mirror, knowing that I could have saved lives of countless children and reversed this country's chronic disease epidemic. I'm 70 years old. I may have a decade to be effective. I can't imagine that President Harris, would allow me or anyone to solve these dire problems. After 8 years of President Harris, any opportunity for me to fix the problem will be out of my reach forever. President Trump has told me that he wants this to be his legacy. My joining the Trump campaign will be a difficult sacrifice for my wife and children, but worthwhile if there's even a small chance of saving these kids. Ultimately, the only thing that will save our country and our children is if we choose to love our kids more than we hate each other. The most unifying theme for all Americans is that we all love our children. If we all unite around that issue now, we can finally give them the protection, the health, and the future that they deserve.
Robert Kennedy is on a campaign to help solve the chronic disease epidemic that's creating generations of sick people and poisoning children. And I would think the fast food restaurants are a culprit too.
That's right. So we really do need new leadership in Washington to eliminate these toxins from our food. But we also need to educate people to think prevention before cure. Think prevention before cure.
Exercise and diet are essential to good health.
It's been said that you are what you eat. That's right, you are what you eat. God created us with magnificent bodies, but putting junk food and poison into them overwhelms our resistance with diseases and early death. So eat right, vote right, walk more, pray more, and you'll worry less and be filled with Holy Spirit joy.
If you would like a CD copy of today's program, please ask for number 1904, RFK's Campaign to Help Children. That's number 1904, RFK's Campaign to Help Children. You can order a CD copy of this program or download a podcast from our website at issuesineducation.org. That's issuesineducation.org. Or for a CD, call us at 928-776-0000. That's 928-776-0000. Proverbs 14:34. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a disgrace to any people. For Issues in Education, this has been Bob and Jerry Boyd.